Welcome to On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind, a podcast emphasizing the heart's role in happiness, in sound decision-making, and in being at our best. Hi, my name is Ron Schneebaum. I'm a physician, work at the outpatient arm of the Children's Hospital at Dartmouth, and serve on the clinical faculty at Dartmouth College's Geisel School of Medicine. I'm convinced that nothing's more important to the human psyche than love. I've worked at thinking with both heart and mind for over 40 years. While intellectual analysis generally carries the banner of thinker, to leave out the heart is to leave out something vital. Language reminds us of the importance of the heart. To do something half-heartedly or to not put our hearts into an activity means we didn't do it well. And to be heartless is not a compliment. We involve our hearts wherever we care the most, where heart and mind work together, we're happier, have richer relationships, and greater practical success. We are fully present and we are fully ourselves. It's the art of living well. Each episode of this podcast presents a different aspect of thinking with heart and mind. Together, I hope they paint a full and broad picture. I developed this podcast to not only describe a lost art, but to also offer challenges and tools that interested listeners can use to incorporate thinking with the heart and mind into all aspects of their lives. The ideas in this podcast are my own, and the stories have been altered to protect privacy. This podcast is not a substitute for medical advice. If you are experiencing significant difficulties, please seek professional help. I thank you for joining me on this venture. My very best and be well, Ron. Episode 16, Trusting Life, A Spiritual Journey with Heart and Mind. Marissa, a 17-year-old, came to my office because she was feeling alone and depressed. This didn't seem to match her life. She was extremely attractive, very bright and did well in school. She was an athlete, and she had a close relationship with her mother, with whom she lived. Her father, who lived in the Midwest, didn't play much of a role in her life, and she had resolved that. Her depression came from being bullied. I had seen her several years before. She was offered a scholarship by a local high school that was an academic powerhouse as well as a school with a strong athletic program. When she got there, however, instead of being warmly accepted by her teammates and the girls who should have been her friends, she was shunned. People didn't talk to her, and she never understood why. She didn't remember anything they said specifically, but it made for a very unpleasant situation. I had seen her once before because of this, and we talked about being bullied, for what was going on was a form of bullying. I explained that it was illegal and shouldn't be allowed. I also reviewed that people who bully others aren't happy in themselves. No one who's content, no one who enjoys their life, gives another a hard time. I asked her if she was interested in medication to help her through, and she thought, no, I can do it on my own. The next time I saw her, she told me that she had dropped out of the school. Even though this school could have changed her life, offering her the possibility of going to colleges that otherwise might be out of her reach, she decided to go to a place that had a friendlier environment. I supported her in this, and I let her know that making a choice that was in one's best immediate interest was a hard thing to do, and she was very courageous in doing it. When she came in now, she told me that people in the school that she left had called some of their friends in the school she currently goes to, and they told them not to talk with her, to leave her alone. And that's why she came at this visit. I again reviewed bullying and its nature, but I went a step further. I said, listen, not only do the people who give you a hard time show that they actually are empty inside and have unhappy lives. You can also take this experience as something positive. You can imagine it as the best training for the rest of your life. It will show you that it's possible to get through being alone and still be strong in oneself. That will strengthen your relationships throughout your life. For when we aren't needy, we have much better relationships. In addition, it could play a role in carving out your career. You might go into psychiatry because you appreciate the difficulties associated with being bullied. You might go into education, or you could be a political leader that makes bullying a priority. You will soon be out of this school, you will be going to college, and nobody there will know who you are, and you start with a clean slate. I again offered her medication to help her get through, and she thought that she had enough. I also told her that I totally supported her, and that if she needed to contact me, I gave her my email address. Devin came to my practice for his annual physical, and he too was 17 years old. He'd had an extremely difficult life. His parents constantly battled, his father abused his mother, and he was torn between the two. They finally got divorced, and now he lived chiefly with his mother. When he was younger, he carried diagnoses of oppositional defiant disorder. He had anger issues, he had tantrums, and he also had a very difficult time in school. At this visit, he looked bright-eyed and clearer than I'd ever seen him. He said that he feels better. I asked about that, and he said that he realized it was time to grow up. He also told me that he stopped taking all of his psychiatric medications and he stopped going to therapy. I don't need them, and they didn't help me, he said. I said, fine. Now, there are some challenges you face. You'll have to figure out what to do at school, because without completing high school, and even without going to college, because you have the potential to do that and to do well, you'll be limited in your career options. He said, I know that. I will continue my education. I'm just not ready for that right now. I also asked about how often he smoked weed, for he had done a lot in the past. I said, if you smoke weed with friends, and you do that to listen to music and to have a good time when you're together, it's not what I would do, but I can't argue with you about that. If, on the other hand, you smoke weed because your life is boring or because you're somewhat depressed, that won't serve you. That can only lead to trouble. He got that. He really understood it. I recommended he see someone who specialized in drug and alcohol issues, and he agreed. I also said, listen, in a non-judgmental way, consider your friends and think about whether they're winners or losers. If they're losers, now is the time for you to think about why you're with them. Our conversation went on, and he told me that one of the things he learned in his life was how to treat someone he cared about. He would never be abusive. He'd seen what happened to his parents, and he said, I'm not repeating their mistakes. I said, you know what? Your commitment to not being like that when you're older is something that most adults don't achieve until they go through their third bad relationship. They don't realize that they're simply copying what they learned in their own childhoods. For you to have achieved this already, you have done something that's quite powerful. In fact, you could use this and look at your life as a great teacher. It showed you what you don't want to do, and because of the difficult situation you grew up in, you've used that as a springboard to commit yourself to changing your life. That in some way, you could look at your life in this way as being a gift. I tell these two stories because in episode 14, in the middle episode of the group about overcoming self-doubt and self-criticism, I mentioned how it's possible to look at the past, make peace with our mistakes, learn what we have to learn, and close the door. Here, I'm taking it a step further. I'm saying that we can look at our life as a teacher, and through that, know that our lives are filled with wisdom and give us exactly what we need. This is a bold statement. I started thinking about it when I saw that several of the most important events in my life happened through situations that I knew weren't because of my doing and that were more than mere coincidences. One I described in the last episode, I was sitting on a park bench reading a newspaper when an ad fell out about a pre-med program at Columbia University, and that ad changed my life. Had it not been for it, I never would have gone into medicine. When I was in college, I had a teacher who changed my life, and I found him through a circumstance that wasn't at all lofty. At the time, I went to school from 8 until 11 in the morning and then went home to watch TV. I had one gap in my schedule in which I could fit a 4-hour class. As I looked through the catalog to see what classes would match, I found that an Ed 1 course fit in that spot perfectly. I wasn't interested in teaching, but teaching was in my life. My mother was an elementary school teacher, and so was my aunt, who was her best friend, and many of their friends were school teachers. So I thought I'd take the class. Two teachers taught the Ed 1 course. One was a Dr. Stoff, and the other was a Dr. Fenner. I asked someone in the cafeteria, someone I wasn't close with at all, which of the two teachers I should take. He said, "Take Stoff. He's an easy marker." And that teacher turned my life around. I was so impressed with him after a few days, I thought to myself, this is a man who works for good in the world. He only taught Ed 1, and afterwards I set up tutorials for the next several semesters so that I could continue to study with him. I've also had experiences that weren't major, that were just nice, that were just comforting, that I also could see came from something outside of myself. When I was in college, I went to the Museum of the Native American in New York City. This was a tiny little museum on the Upper West Side. Its exhibition space was so limited that it held many of its materials in glass drawers. You'd open them and be able to see them by the glass covering. In one, I saw a book that I immediately got. It was called Black Elk Speaks. It was the story of an Oglala Sioux holy man, a man who was born prior to the settling of the West by the white man. He lived in an age when the Sioux roamed from the beautiful Black Hills and across the Great Plains. Late in his life, a professor from university came out to his house to have him tell his story, and they sat in an old cabin while his wife and granddaughter brought them lemonade and cookies. At one point in my career, situations led to my working at the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation as a pediatrician. Pine Ridge Reservation is the home of the Oglala Sioux. When I was leaving, I was on my way to the Black Hills. I saw a sign that said Manderson, South Dakota. This was the town where the cabin was. And I thought it would be great if I could get to see the old cabin, the cabin where Black Elk told his story. I asked many people along the way if they knew where the old cabin was, and no one did. I didn't know if they were preserving their secret and not wanting to let an outsider know. I was about to give up when I saw a grocery store, and I thought I would try one more time. I went inside and asked the man behind the counter, "Would you know where Black Elk's old cabin is? Why do you want to know?" I said, "His story meant so much to me, I'd love to be able to see the old cabin." "Go talk to the gentleman over there." I didn't move fast enough for him, and he said, "Hurry, go talk to him." There was a man who seemed to be in his 50s looking at some groceries, and I went up to him and I said, "Excuse me, would you know where Black Elk's old cabin is?" And he asked, "Why do you want to know?" And I told him the same thing. He said, "Follow me. As I drive, you'll see my house. There's a blue truck and a red truck in the driveway. Go between them and knock on the door and ask for my mother. That's Black Elk's granddaughter." So I went to the house, knocked on the door, and when someone asked who it was, I said, "It's Ron." And they opened the door, and I said I was told that I could meet with Black Elk's granddaughter, and they let me in, and then a woman in her 80s came out. We sat on the couch in the living room and talked. She told me that she never read Black Elk's book. It hurt too much because of what happened to her people. And after we talked for a while, I asked if she would sign my copy of Black Elk Speaks, and she said she would. She did that, and then she asked the grandchildren to show me the old cabin, so I was able to step outside and see where Black Elk told his story, and nobody else was there with me. When I considered the idea that there is meaning and love in life, I said to myself, if our life is surrounded by love, then love's other name is wisdom. Now, it's clear to me that we're connected to love, and I know that because of the compassion and caring we can give to another. When we do that, it's not that we have the compassion and caring, we open ourselves to it and let that shine through us and into the other. And this compassion and caring is something that's transcendent and universal. A story or a poem or a piece of artwork from someone in any culture and at any time that spoke of love would speak to my heart in the same way a contemporary tale would. That's one way to recognize its transcendence. I also said to myself, if I can recognize a moment to be something beyond myself, to be something that's a gift, to be something that comes from another sphere, then that interaction must take place with every episode and every situation in my life. I am always filled with love, and I'm never alone. It couldn't be any other way. If it exists in one place in my life, then it has to be there in all places. This is similar to seeing the sun behind the clouds one day, and then knowing that if I saw the sun behind the clouds on this cloudy day, then the sun stands behind the clouds every day. Whether I see it or not, whether I think about it or not, that is independent of its being there. As I further thought about this idea, I saw that it was basic to every religion and spiritual practice I knew about. In the Eastern traditions I was aware of, the concept of accepting what is basic. And this was characterized in the 60s by the title of Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now. If the world wasn't filled with wisdom and love, it would be impossible to be present and be in the moment. Instead, one would have to defend oneself against chaos. In the 23rd Psalm, David says, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff comfort me. In the Sermon on the Mount, Christ spoke about the lilies of the field and said, if I clothe these as beautifully as I do, and if these then wither and die, get tossed into the oven, is the way he put it, then don't you think I care for you? And then later he said, I am with you until the ends of the earth. I also saw a verse by Rudolf Steiner, an Austrian mystic and educator who lived in the early 1900s. He had given a verse about how our job is to have the courage to accept what is and to meet it with calm and strength. With all that, I felt I needed to see for myself whether or not this idea was indeed true. It seemed there was only one way to test whether an idea was true, and that was by incorporating into my life, by acting as if it was true and seeing if it held. That meant I would have to consider that everything that comes at me from the outside, and that with every mistake that I make, love is with me and that I'm never alone. This gives me the ability to be completely present and focused. I think of this as an athlete or a performer might. After doing all their preparation and creating the space and time to be there for their performance, they can let go of everything else and simply be who they are. That's what this attitude, if it held and if it was true, would give to me in my life. So my way of testing it would be by living as if it was true and seeing if it enhanced and strengthened my ability to be present and be who I am in the fullest sense of the word. It would also give the ability to lean on and live in love, and that also would strengthen me. So I set about on this task, and that meant I had to trust that everything that happened was filled with wisdom. While I was working with this idea, I had a planned bicycle trip around Nova Scotia. My plan was to drive to Portland, Maine, and then take the ferry across to Nova Scotia. I had reservations around the province, and my hope for the trip was to do some great bicycle riding. The night I checked into my hotel in Portland, I had shooting pain down my right arm. This pain was so severe, I knew that with it, I couldn't hold on to the handlebars, nor would I be able to squeeze the brakes on that side. I had pain like this once before. It was from something called carpal tunnel. I didn't think it worthwhile to stop the trip because I was pretty sure about what it was. The problem is related to some swelling and pressure on the nerves around the wrist, and this isn't something that warrants immediate attention. Instead of getting upset, I said to myself, oh, first I'll see if it clears, and if it doesn't, since I know what it probably is, I don't need to stop the trip and get medical advice. Instead of bicycle riding, I'll do the writing that I've been wanting to do. I've been working on a piece and I really wanted to get it finished. So I went on the trip, went to the various spots that I picked out, had a great time, but instead of doing bicycle riding, I spent a lot of the time indoors doing some writing. And I did this without being flustered or upset or concerned or worried in the least. Because if love is with me, love was with me with this pain. Maybe the writing I wanted to do was more important than I even considered. I also said to myself, if this is true, then the pain should go away a day or two after I get back. And that's exactly what happened. Another time, I was going to visit my mother in Florida. I was at the airport, had checked my bags, parked my car in the long-term parking lot, and now came back to the airport to check in and get on my plane. When I got to security, I saw that I didn't have my driver's license. I frantically looked through my bag searching for it, and it wasn't there. I panicked. I thought my mother would give me such a hard time if I didn't have my license. In addition, though I could get through security, without my license, I wouldn't be able to rent a car. When I go to visit my mother, I like to take trips with her. That gets us away, and now I wouldn't be able to. I would have to stay with her in a small apartment, and I would have to eat her cooking. That wasn't something I looked forward to at all. And I would also have to stay on the grounds of her senior center, and that was not an idea that I looked forward to either. I then took into account this new approach, and I said to myself, wait a second. If I don't have my license, love knows where it is. And if love knows where it is, I needn't worry. That doesn't mean I'm static and don't move. It means that I can then go and look for it without fear. I also thought to myself, if love knows where it is, then there's got to be a reason for my not having it. It could be that the trips I had planned were too much for my mother, and that she really needed to stay home and rest a bit. It could also be there was somebody at her senior center that was important for me to meet. Or it could have been a time for my mother to show off, to show me how she lived, and that might have been important for her. Once I settled in with these ideas and I was no longer worried, I still went to try to find my license. Accepting what is does not mean not moving forward. It means seeing what is and then seeing how to act. It has nothing to do with giving in. So I raced to the counter where I checked my bags, thinking I had my license then and it had to be there, but it wasn't. I then thought, well, maybe I somehow left it in my truck after I parked it. So I raced to the long-term shuttle, and just as I got there, it pulled out. A cabbie who had seen what happened pulled up and said, I'll give you a ride and it's on me. So he drove me out to where my car was, and there was my license right on top of some papers that I had. I got it, raced to the shuttle. The shuttle was just heading back to the airport, and when I got through security, I got to the plane just before the doors closed for final boarding. Sometimes I think life presents episodes for me to practice this idea of trusting my life. I've been at it now for some 15 to 20 years. It makes sense only in the context of me looking at my own life. I can't look at some of the difficulties, tragedies, and problems that other people have or that the world has. I can only look at it from my own life, and it only makes sense in terms of growth. It sets me in a place where I can use the situation I'm in, discover who I want to be, and through that, learn and grow. And it's done just that. I felt stronger, I felt more solid, I feel more capable, and mostly I feel more fully myself, and I feel more closely connected to love. And I can't imagine any other framework that would give me the same inner strength. I present this podcast to not only share my thoughts on thinking with heart and mind, but to also offer tools that interested listeners can use in their daily lives. In that regard, I have several exercises associated with this episode. The exercises for this episode are meant as a way to review the content. These are points to consider and ideas to think about. 1. Love is transcendent. Follow the thought that was developed in the episode and think through the idea of love being transcendent. 2. If I can love another, have compassion for another, love is within me and I'm connected to its source. 3. If love fills me, then it's always with me. It has to be. 4. Love, by another name, is wisdom. If you care for another, if you love another, even if it's your dog or cat, you treat them with love, and that love is wise. 5. If I see wisdom and love in one event in my life, then it must be present in all events. It's then up to me to find it in the other places. 6. If love is with me, I can drop worry and be present because I'm never alone and I'm never deserted. That doesn't mean the situations and things that happen are of my choosing and are things that I'd wish had happened, but life is real. What happens in the world happens in the world. That doesn't mean that with love present, there are no difficulties, there are no challenges, there are no tragedies. For if life is about growth, this is the material through which we learn and grow. Think about athletes. They want to face the toughest competition, for that's what gives them the ability to grow. Through our lives, we have the opportunity to learn, to grow, to test and form our beliefs so that we can be our most loving and complete selves. 7. If wisdom is with me, I am perfectly placed and in the exact right setting. In this way, I am given complete freedom to choose. If something happens that's very difficult for me to manage, it's hard to get a great sense of the goodness in there during that time, and that's fine. On the other hand, it's also possible to look at the lives of others and the stories of others to be able to see how this idea makes sense. I know, for example, people who ended up marrying the nurse that took care of the dying spouse. That didn't change the dying of the spouse. It didn't say that one was good than another. It's just noting that the way they met is through that nurse being there while that spouse was dying. 8. If it makes sense to you then that love is with us and that there is wisdom in our lives, then why not take the leap? Test out this idea by living as if it's true. You can do this for a few weeks, a few months. Nothing changes. Nobody has to know that you're doing this. It doesn't make you foolhardy. Nothing else happens that changes. It's just you're simply testing out the idea that does this make sense? Let me know your results. I'd love to read what you've gone through, and I'd love to share it. To further aid listeners with these exercises, I've converted them into the show notes for this episode. The show notes can be found at the homepage of this podcast. It can also be found where you listen to podcasts. This podcast website is ronschneibaummd.com. It can also be found by searching on beinghappier.com. In that situation, on being happier must be one word. At the podcast website at onbeinghappier.com, I've also posted a picture with the words Trusting Life, a spiritual journey with heart and mind. There's a small size and a large size of this picture. The small size can be downloaded and used as wallpaper for your phone. The large size can be downloaded and used as a screensaver for your tablet or laptop. I find that having words in front of me of something I'm working on is a helpful reminder. If you have questions about this episode, either about the exercises or about the content, email me at ron@onbeinghappier.com. Write questions in the subject line. If you have any comments about this episode or about future episodes, send me an email with comments as the subject line. And if you'd like to receive a newsletter, write newsletter. I'm so grateful for listeners who share this podcast. It's now being heard in over 80% of the states of the United States, and it's also heard across the world. That's because of your sharing. To make this idea even more well known, I have now started an Instagram page and a Facebook page. You can find them by searching On Being Happier. I hope to see you there on social media, where I'll be able to add some information that I'm not able to offer on the podcast. There's a period of about 2 weeks in between episodes. Sometimes that period is longer. Use this time to take these ideas and work with them. If you are streaming podcasts, instead of just going from one to another, think about the content in this episode. Again, what we're aiming to do is to forge these ideas into tools you can use for the rest of your life. I so enjoy the time that we spend together. I look forward to our next time. And until then, all my best and be well, Ron.